Friday afternoon. Be lead in by Pete and Pat, basically, all sets the stage for this presentation. And the idea here is that, as Pete alluded to only recently, within TCS 08 and ITOP, have we really taken into account the 3D, both atmospheric and oceanic, for Genesis cases. We'll see in a moment some of the reasons why that has occurred. So I'd like to acknowledge Pete, Pat, and Russ Elsberry for helping make what Pete calls combo flights actually take place. We're going to focus on Genesis cases here, and the research goal, as you might expect, is to map the 3D atmospheric and oceanic environment. However, in operations, we do it completely opposite. So in the Atlantic, since that's the only basin that we have routine reconnaissance, the National Hurricane Center sends out a plane that flies at 1,500 feet, and its sole mission in life is to find the center and hopefully make some estimate of the maximum. So at 1,500 feet, you have a better opportunity to physically fly through the maximum. So in other words, you're not taking advantage of the multiple sensors and drop sign capabilities, AXPTs, that you potentially have available. You're simply boring a hole through the sky at 1,500 feet. However, if you fly at 1,500 feet, you have no idea what the real 3D atmospheric structure is of wind temperature and moisture. And if you're not dropping any HPTs, obviously you don't know what the ocean thermal structure is. So in context of the variability that we've seen already today and the potential that that has on Genesis, we can't determine whether those conditions are favorable for TC Genesis or not, nor can we actually determine what conditions are that are required for TC Genesis. So Ron, that may be an item for the next DRI. We don't know the parameter space of what can permit Genesis, whether in combination of moisture, shear, ocean thermal structure, i.e. the combined 3D environment. We have pieces of it, and TCS 08 and ITOP have contributed mightily to that data set. So the status quo right now is a 1,500 foot data set. However, we do have other options using the WC-130J from the Air Force. The endurance of 12 hours, the GPS drop signs, the AXPTs with the 98% success rate, the step frequency microwave radar, the surface wind speeds, real-time mods, all this being relayed in near real time. So the benefits are quite obvious. With the drop zones, 3D wind profiling, we can help determine whether or not there is a low-level circulation center. We can determine whether that low-level circulation center is tilted with height, and if there is cool or dry air being entrained, and what kind of wind shear, as the case with the Malacca that Pat showed earlier. And as we well know, our atmospheric models have difficulty extending surface data aloft and their data simulation schemes. And we also need those 3D measurements for the inner core. And for those models that still use bogus vortexes, this 3D information is vital. And so as Pat showed, shear details are crucial to both track and intensity forecasts. So the other benefits of the WC-130J and flying at 30,000 feet with the AXPTs, mapping the ocean thermal structure, monitoring the ocean fronts and eddies, done in concert with infrared and microwave SSTs from satellites, and altimeter-derived sea surface heights. So if we have goals of actually satisfying the data needs of a couple of tropical cyclone forecasting models, then the combo capability that is described here is essential to move forward. We also, if flying at 30,000 feet, can fly faster and longer tracks, and it's also safer for the crews and the planes themselves. So I'll take Pete's mishmash of diagrams that he showed earlier and put them in an actual table that makes a little more sense. And you can see that for TCS 08 and ITOP, we flew a lot of flights and a lot of hours. Note over here, we deployed quite a few more times, as obviously with the ocean emphasis in ITOP. But this is the key table here. In ITOP, you can see that we dropped a whole bunch of AXPTs as well as AXCTVs, the profilers, and the floats. So the emphasis was ocean, but at the same time, we dropped 828 drop zones to, in essence, sample the 3D atmospheric structure. So since Pete stole a couple of my slides, the basic idea here is that we're applying a square spiral for what we call these genesis or beginning stages of the tropical cyclone. So the square spiral with regards to the drop zones and the AXBTs, we typically drop a BT at the same location as the drop zones, but in a few cases, they were staggered. And the point, as Pete was saying, is that we would physically move these square spirals as we go from one day to the next, one flight to the next. And I should note that even though we had some of the best forecasters on the planet in terms of where that system, especially with a Genesis system, trying to figure out where that's going to be in 24 or 36 hours is challenging, to say the least. We were able, after dropping three or four sons on the first leg, to be able to adapt on the fly and adjust the square spiral as needed to, in essence, ensure that the square spiral adequately encompassed the Genesis system. So with that in mind, an example here, this is an example of Panopi on September 13th. We're going to start on the top. This is up at 400 millibars. In the background is a microwave image. So we're, in essence, looking at rain here. The yellows and the reds are active precipitation. Light rain is in green here. And what we're showing here are 400 millibar winds from the drop zone data. And basically, we see an open wave aloft. However, when we overlay this on the visible imagery, the same. And then as we work our way down to 700 millibars, you can see that we're beginning of a mid-level circulation center aligned with the convective activity overlaying in the visible imagery. The microwave is the same. And then once we work our way down to the surface has a closed circulation, which is well contained within the active convection. And if you actually looped the geostationary imagery, you would be able to see, in essence, some aspect of the low-level circulation center. But the point here is that it does not extend all the way up. It hasn't fulfilled its genesis stage yet. But as we move forward a day to the next set of flights, the storm has physically moved to the northwest, and we now overlay this on top of a windset, 37 gigahertz, which is synonymous with cloud liquid water, i.e. the lower boundary layer. We can see that we have a closed circulation now at 400 millibars. The system has physically worked its way up in terms of organization to a well-organized system aloft. So this system is now ready to go. The point here is that if we were doing this at 1,500 feet, we would have absolutely no information about what is happening above and, in essence, understanding the 3D atmospheric circulation. One of the things that we plan to do is use data denial experiments with COAMS TC in terms of utilizing just the lower portion of the data, as you, one might do with a Genesis flight, as dictated by the National Hurricane Center, versus utilizing the entire 3D structural information that you see here. So if we were to go take a look at the sounding at this top center drop zone, it looks like this. And basically, the red is temperature, relative humidity is blue. We have a dry tongue that extends through a significant portion of the atmosphere as we're up against dry air to the north of the system. But if we actually go to the drop zone that is in the dead center associated with the active convection, you can see that we've moistened up the environment and it has a favorable conditions within which to work with it. We can also take the 3D atmospheric soundings and calculate total precipitable water since we're starting up at 300 millibars. These are TPW values in millimeters, so we go from low 60s, the majority of the system that's embedded in the convective moist air here, but you can see that in the northwest, we're hinging against cooler dry air, where values have dropped significantly near 40 millimeters instead of in the 60s. So this gives you important information as to the environment within which the Genesis system is trying to develop. Underneath, these are the XPTs with the Panopi track overlaying on top. We're going to take a look at two XPTs, one on the top center, which is in the shallower mixed layers, and then in the center. So on the left, we have the top or northernmost one. on the right, we have the one in the center. To make comparisons easier, we'll overlay the two. And as you might expect, this is the north one on the right. You can see the greater potential for upwelling of cold water on the top one, as you might expect. And this is, in essence, what Malacca's did, is it moved up through this area, but now he moved more to the west and continued to develop in favorable conditions. An example of the microwave SSTs. So the bottom line here is you're going to use all the resources that you have in combination to the drop zones for the 3D atmosphere, the XPTs for the ocean thermal structure, but to get the more frequent 2D SST field, the satellite data comes in quite handy. So in terms of 3D ocean thermal structure, the use of the IR and the microwave SSTs along with the satellite altimeter and ocean model data sets to map the OFC on ocean fronts and that eddies analysis. The ocean eddies interact with typhoons, as Pete was talking about, and our understanding of how they deal with Genesis cases is very vague at the moment due to lack of data. And the SST wake signal can be rapidly modified, as we saw earlier today, while subsurface thermal structure persists for a significantly longer time period. So a summary comparison, if we use the status quo on the left with a 1,500-foot invest, we do get a relatively good idea of where the low-level circulation is and potentially what the max winds are. But on the right, we argue that 30,000-foot invest maximizes the sensor capabilities with regards to the 3D winds, mapping 3D drop zones, measuring the winds, temperature, and moisture, and whether or not the environment is favorable or not. And the XPTs, mapping the ocean thermal structure that is sorely needed for the propagation model and data initialization. So with that in mind, we believe that the WC-130J Invest demo is needed to test the utility of this capability in the Atlantic, where we have the capability to carry out this experiment with the resources, the full resources of the 53rd, as well as potentially in concert with the folks from NOAA ASA. So I'll be glad to answer any questions or comments that you might have. Thank you.
Mention that at least half of this demo is something we've been working on to be able to do the test deployment of AXPTs in the Atlantic. That's Sanavia working at the Naval Academy, and with support from ONR has been able to get a program together for midshipmen to work at Keesla and could serve as operators for such an effort. And the 53rd themselves are working on improving the drop tube and a few things like that. So, hoping possibly as early as this summer to be able to test deploy the XPTs anyway.
The irony is that while I was talking to the 53rd while on Guam for 3 weeks, I discovered that during their missions, their typical task missions for an AHC, I asked them how many AHPTs do they have?
Two.
Zero. How many drop zones do they drop? Maybe three or four. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Jeff. So Jeff, if you change the strategy, the question is there implication for real time? You mentioned assimilation here, but that there'll be a lag either to the next model runtime or whatever it is. Is there implication for processing any of these, especially the AXPTs now, in addition to the drops in real time, in terms of changing either the observing strategy or the frequency of observations or the coverage of observations?
The answer is yes. Pete basically, with his system that he put together, and the folks that he, Robert E. Lee and Mike and company who worked their butts off, basically proved that you can collect, process, and distribute off the plane before it hits the ground all the AXPTs.
Lands
softly on a paved runway. So the BTs and the SONs are out the door before the plane returns. And that data is available on GPS for routine assimilation by whomever. So that has been demonstrated. So the kicker would be to automate the process. We had state-of-the-art folks who were processing, so we would need to move to the next step of automating that procedure to minimize the manpower and cost.
I guess my question, though, was in real, while you're flying, is there enough information that you would alter observing strategies based on what you might be seeing from these as you're processing them on the aircraft?
Well, we already do that in the context that we change the flight track based on the information that we receive from the drop zones. So the answer is yes. We have, on quite a few occasions, adjusted the track in flight within the constraints of the air traffic control.
Well, operationally, that is a missing link. There's nobody in the Hurricane Center to monitor those flights and decide we want to make a change or not. And the other thing that you raised about the timely availability of the data, the one thing you might have to change in the strategy is to fly C-130 like you did the G4. You know, time to take off so that you get most of your data before 0-0 tells you.
Right, so you would sync up the flight to maximize the model inputs via their data cutoffs.
Well, your demo would be...
Okay, we are running a little bit late. Let's move on to the next speaker. Pete again.